for inviting me. And I also want to congratulate you for your university, which is really, you're lucky if you want to proceed with open science. Jyväskylä University has really good knowledge and are one of the universities in the front line in Finland. So you have all the possibilities. And also I want to congratulate you for joining this course because that's a very smart move. Openness is something that, as was mentioned here, might be considered extra work and blah 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 bureaucracy and why do I have to do this, and it's but in reality this is something you can really gain a lot from. It might not come soon or easy. It might take some work, but in the end I think it's really smart. If you're aware of these possibilities that you have, you can make the smart choices. And it takes some planning. So that, no, let's see. Well, this is some strange version of. Where can I get the? This one. Here. There. Yeah. Okay, it was on the wrong side. Well, yeah. So I'm Jessica Parlan von Essen. My background is in history and LIS, Library and Information Sciences. And I currently work at CSC, the IT Center for Science. And I mainly work with this Open Science and Research Initiative. That is an initiative started by the Ministry of Education and Culture in Finland. As we heard, it's on the high-level EU agenda, this open science stuff. And in Finland, we're also fortunate to have had people in the government positions who have also seen this, the importance of this open science for a small country like Finland. And this is work that has been ongoing for several years. There has been other projects or initiatives before this, Avoin tiede ja tutkimus. And now this initiative is now it's going into its final year, but there will be continuation. I've been working with this initiative, working with research data and education and open science and metadata things for now more than 2 years. But I also will touch upon some of the things that Mikko was talking about, maybe a bit of a different angle. Due to my background as a historian, I've been very interested in this, what exactly does this mean in the society, that this whole culture of knowledge, how we store and share information has been changing now. We have been very dependent on books and the printing press and paper, which is a very expensive and slow way of disseminating information. And there's, I'd say, the changes in the society, they are really, really huge. one thing is this whole idea of authority, which has many sort of dimensions. I'm not only talking about this authority like the person that sort of one you have this title or position, then you have sort of the position to tell the truth and give the facts, and it's also you're the professor and you have had this many books printed, so what you're telling is the truth. But that's one thing. Now today all authorities, traditional authorities, are or should be engaged in constant negotiation and dialogue. You have to prove your expertise all the time. It can be questioned, and it is constantly questioned by any people who Google and reads one book and then a few articles and blog posts and find some even scientific articles that they think they understand, and they come and question your expertise, and you have to somehow all the time prove prove and explain why you know better. But also the same word is this author, which I think is also significant. We have this copyright idea also. It's very strongly connected and has its origins in the book and printing history. Just to make publishing worthwhile and economically sustainable, copyright was introduced about 200 years ago soon, and at first it was only for a few years, this idea of ownership of your work, which is now really in question also because knowledge creation is different and co-writing is different, and it's been now so many times proven that also sharing economy can work, cooperation can work, doing things together is more efficient, you find flaws, people are engaged, and if you sort of build knowledge together, it's more, many times it's more smart and efficient, but it's really shaking somehow the foundations of much of the economy and the political systems and how we think that things work. Now, everything, this is of course about information, culture is information, knowledge is information, science is information, and when we transfer information, that's communication. Things, just a couple of points about this, what's happening now when all information is turning digital. The first point is the media convergence that's happening. From having sort of lots of different media, mass media, we're now, everything is now going to the web. So we have all media in the same place. This is also shaking the economy and culture. But also when all this information and these codes are these bits, they can merge also in into one media. You can now combine all kinds of graphic, video, audio, text, and also the whole structure of the sort of how we communicate these more complex things, which was before always being this narrative, which has been this important part of communicating scientific knowledge, also this publication, which is sort of a narrative. You always, however messy research you do, you by the end you write this neat little story about how you did this with this given parts. And the results are bland. This is sort of the manifestation. But now we're sort of losing these building blocks, and everything is sort of floating around and can be combined in new ways. And this is it's shaking the publishers and really badly. Hope yet that you also see this as a possibility. Even as it was mentioned that the way you get merit and credits and in this situation, I want to be an optimist, and I want to think that if you can be creative about this and innovative in how you do science and how we communicate it, what kinds of tools, how you communicate it, I think in the long run you will win. Maybe you won't get this UFO points publication, whatever, now, next year, but in the end I think you will gain kudos. Yeah, I mean, it's good. Then there's another thing about this. We touched somebody, there was this discussion about data and the amount of data. since publishing now is free, everything can be published, even though businesses are really trying to make this hard. we have to think about, not about sort of maybe not only peer review before publishing, but also the review after publishing. And this is something that this American sociologist, Clay Shirky, has been talking about this, that we have moved from this filter first, publish then economy and society to publish first, filter then. And when we start publishing data, we will have also in science this data deluge. There's going to be so much data. And this is something that is, it's that's the reason why you have to do the extra work, because of this, that we are, when we are doing and working today, it's digital, and we have to be good scientists and to do science, we have to sort of administer and manage this digital stuff that we work with to make good data. So this takes a lot of research data management, and I will be coming back to that. And a fourth thing that I would like to mention is question of sustainability, which is really tough in the digital environment. Before, we usually had this in the paper world also, we had this idea of the original and the authority, and this was this. You could always go back to the book and see what's this really, how was this? Or you could go and look stuff. But when the data, when it's bits, it's just like zeros and ones, and it there is actually no original. You can copy it as many times as you like, but it's not in a way that the human can perceive it and understand it and process it. For us to be able to understand it, it has to go to a transformation with hardware and software, and so there is no original now. We just have sort of copies, and every time we open this data set and document, it's somehow recreated in the process. So that makes it really tough. Also, one of the main points of this open science is this idea of transparency and reproducibility, and that it should be, all science should be replicable, which is of course not really possible in all all fields. But this means really you have to do really good much documentation, because you don't have this original, and you can't prove, or you can, but it's technically not easy to prove sort of that this is unfalsified. Nobody has tampered with this and changed this one to a zero. So you have to have extremely thorough documentation about what software you've been using and how you've manipulated the data and things. But we'll come back to that. So one just point, I think the one of the drivers also in this open science movement has been, as was mentioned, the open access. And I also maybe want to make a plea. Maybe Pekka can and will tell more about it, but we are really in Finland. In Finland, we have to get this stuff, articles from behind the paywalls. We have this consortia of libraries, the Finelib, who negotiate together with these huge publishing houses. And And the prize is, last year Finland was one of the, I think maybe the first country where we really sorted this out. How much did we pay for this access to basically privately funded articles that were written by people, researchers who were paid by funders, government money, whatever, and they're peer-reviewed free of charge. People are working without pay to make to peer-review, and then we have these publishing houses that charges, and they charges, it was like 27 million euro last year. And what's sad, this has been for the library people, I think this has been so difficult for a long time, for a long, long time. In the beginning of the digitization and internet, we were like, yay, it's going to be cheap and free and everything will like flow. But the truth is that it has been so expensive. And it's not that it's expensive, the prices are rising all the time. And exactly now, this month, the Finnelib consortium is trying to negotiate with Elsevier, which was one of these really big publishing houses that they also keep buying all small papers, and those negotiations aren't going very well. So there, in a worst case scenario, we will have no access to Elsevier's papers from next year, and this is it's really a bad situation, and I hope that researchers also will have an understanding for this. The cuts have been quite tough on the research sector in Finland last year. And also the libraries have been paying and paying and paying for this. So somehow there must come, we must have a change, and we must, I hope that we will come to a good solution, but it's difficult for a small country. So open access is really a good thing, and it's not free. We will probably hear about that more. I mean, there's also always a lot of work that is done, but there can be different models to fund this, and it doesn't have to be through these companies who are making, I think Elsevier was making like a 1 billion net result last year. So, but I wanted now to talk about this copyright and this ownership to data, which was also a question. In Finland, as in most countries today, copyright is applied on all works. That means when once you create something, unless there's a contract, for instance, with your employer concerning code or something that you own, you have, or you don't maybe own, but you have a copyright, you have a say in how the things you have done are used. And this means that no one can make copies or develop your work really. You can cite, of course, but you can't really use it unless it's licensed by all copyright holders. And licensing can be used to give different rights. You can say non-commercial use, or you can change this and things like that. But the more open licenses you give, the better, because it gets more simple. You all know that in science, you always have to tell about your sources. It's not credible good science if people don't cite their sources. You can't just say I or lie about where you have gotten the data. People will tell where they got this. They have to do it to be credible scientists, so don't fear about that. For data in Finland, we have recommended the Creative Commons 0 or CC BY if you consider that there is really need to that you have done something that you need to be mentioned. And really, this is also something you can think about when you do self-archiving. Because when you self-archive, that doesn't mean you give away the copyright. You still own the rights. So, but I'd say if you're smart, just put a CC BY license on your article. If you have the possibility to do that on your work, then it will reach further. It can be used. And in science, everything, your name will follow. I think you don't have to. The risk is smaller than the gain. So Foster was already mentioned here. This is the Foster Open Science definition. Foster's Open Science is the page you could check out. These are from the initiatives kind of lists of what the Finnish Open Science project is aiming at and hoping for. These were quite well already discussed in the previous presentations. Now I would really argue that you better impact and visibility, as I said, in the long term you will gain. You maybe don't get gain in the traditional way, not now, but you will win respect and people will cite you more if you are open. That's proven. Also, this is something that the funders and also the university, I think here too today, really asserts that you are open if you can. Now, it's also important to remember there are reasons when you can't be open. For instance, if you work with sensitive data and there's information about children or people's personal data or something, you can't, of course you can't give that. So, but in that case, open data means, anyway, it means that you document it thoroughly, and maybe if you that you negotiate all the papers and stuff in such a way that maybe some other researcher will be able to use the same research data later. So this is something, but this is something you have to think about already in the beginning when you're planning your research. How you inform your research subjects and informants and get their consents. In Finland, it's not possible to get an open consent for anything other than the biobank stuff, as far as I know. So this means that every time, if you want to read or use data that has somehow involved people, you should, at least if it's not completely anonymized, you should always get a new consent. Every time you make a register with people, there is lots of law that you have to, and you have to be careful, and really respect people's integrity. Also, one point I want to stress is this second last, which is not always reminded, stressed enough. If you make agreements and contracts or license your data in a way that it's open, this means that also when you change employer project, then you can have access to that data. Because today many really, really nasty quarrels have been when people have changed sort of projects and somebody took their data with them and some others were left out. And so that's not good. So if by advocating open licenses and open data and open policies and signing to them, and everybody should sign everything already in the beginning when you start, discuss this through and make it clear, this means that you yourself, you won't lose your data to somebody else. You can always reuse it. So okay. Here's a sort of picture about the workflow in academia. It's a bit same that the Mikko has, but this is by Kramer and Bosman. And we see that there are this, firstly, the traditional way how you use maybe proprietary code programs and write in Word, public in Nature, and then have the traditional sort of impact assessment. It's more modern. You can use Google for discovery, which is Google Scholar, for instance, is getting more and more popular today. You can use R if you're doing this kind of statistical works. You can publish preprints. You can publish in open access papers, and also do the self-archiving. And then you can study also other sort of altmetric way how to, for instance, downloads and stuff, which is not used, fortunately, as assessment yet. But it's nice to know sort of for yourself. And this is sort of happening already. But there are really so many other ways. But the point here is that once now where everything is still digital, or not everything, but really most things are happening in a digital environment, it's possible to open and share all the way. And this is something that nobody should, I think, tell you, because you have your own research and your own knowledge about it, but you should really think about this. Where can I, at which point can I share and things with others? What the tools are that you use? Can I share this PowerPoint? Because, why was my slide? There are some links here. Yeah, okay. Good. An important thing is to remember to, in the very beginning, to think about all requirements by the funders, by the employer, what are the policies. And this is why now, for instance, the Finnish Academy requires these data management plans. It's not to be bitchy or not nice and make your extra work, but this is to force the researchers to really think about these things even before they start their work. What kind of different contracts do I need to make? What are the different policies that apply here? And what are the sort of ethical, commercial, are there any patents, which rights apply in with which to which stuff? And then, of course, if you choose open code, open source methods, this makes also these software transparent, which is really important. If you remember what I said about this, that we have only these bits, you can't use them without the software that really creates sort of the data. But if it's proprietary and you can't check the code and you can't review it, how can you evaluate? How can you assess the science? It's like a black box. That's not, I think, good science at all. So choose open source software and open interface. Then it's much better. And then you don't have to worry about this sort of bought licenses and stuff. So we will hear about the services and archiving today, about this public publication and distribution. I want to once again mention that it's really important to document, to describe your data so that it's findable. We have this FAIR. Do you have a pen here? Yeah? Principles that data should be findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. And these are becoming more and more important. You can Google them. So it's to for data to be fair, you really have to produce metadata. If you don't know what that is and how you do it, please turn to your library. Metadata and data formats and all that should be open, should be standardized, and should also be the way that your colleagues can understand it. So it's often domain specific. That's why I'm now talking on a very general level. And it's also often the case that when you turn to the library, they don't have the answer right away, because these are very difficult questions. These are new questions. And these are something that you have to sort out many times together with the library personnel. You have to find out which are good solutions. So this is a discussion and a negotiation. It's not simple. It takes a little bit work. But boy, are you happy when you can publish that data compared to if after 5 years you realize you can't. And that's half the work down the drain. So it's really worthwhile. And then also the citations in the digital world, I will come back. This is a very common when you go to these courses and you discuss this. They talk about this research cycle and the data life cycle and stuff, but I hate it. I will come back to that. So what can researchers, scientists do? collaborate, sort of be open, use open platforms. And this is also no simple answers. You have to find out and try. Is it a wiki? Do you want to use Drive? Many researchers do use services like Dropbox, Google Drive, if they collaborate. It works sometimes, but they're also, remember, if it's sensitive data, you shouldn't be using this sort of commercial services, cloud services. Then you should use more secure services, which you will hear about today, later. So you have to consider all this, and you have to also assess the risks. All cloud services aren't very predictable and reliable. It happens that they sort of leak, or they just shut down and everything's gone. So it takes planning. Citizen science was mentioned. What I really would like to see more in Finland is cooperation with schools. This would be so great. Think about this. Is there one small piece you could invite the school class or teachers to do something to engage them? Is there something they could contribute with, and you could share and do together some small experiment or something? That would be really great. But also publish grey publications, which are not peer-reviewed. The sooner you publish, the more you also can claim ownership. I mean, if you published an idea in your blog year X, you can always show, hey, I said this already there. So you can get cited, you can find people. I've heard so many great stories about people who have been blogging and found new corporations. And also, this also, if you... sometimes people from the general public have strange information and data which can be interesting to you, and they can sort of contribute in surprising ways. So really, also presentations, and always license. Put these Creative Commons licenses. You can go to the creativecommons.org, I think, and choose licenses. It's really easy to use. So, and also using social media was mentioned. Also, I would like to, if you have the possibility, get to know Research Data Alliance, which is a sort of bottom-up organization, international, very interesting organization. There are also researchers, but also people from important agents and actors. And also Open Knowledge Finland is an organization. Membership is free. They have Open Science Finland Facebook group, for instance, where there's, if you want to follow this discussion, and you can get inspired and get great ideas. Here's this link where you can find tools. So now I'm going to have to hurry through my data. Data, research data management points. About metadata, I already mentioned. I think I've mentioned all of these concerns data as well as anything else. I would recommend you all get for everything you do a persistent identifier, which is sort of a way in this very fussy digital world to sort of point to a exact version of a data set. You can freeze it, you describe it, so others can use it, and then it's reproducible. You need to also see that the data is also really is saved somewhere. You can ask from the library about this ORCID. You will also hear about, I think, later. It's for the researchers. Get one. So you can be identified. Well, once we have these identifiers, we will be able to link the author to the data, to the publications, to the code, to the funder, project, everything. So and it will be a sort of machine readable, which will be really great. So we're working on it. It's coming, and it's great. So and while using these identifiers, you really make it better to, or easier to get your credit. And always when you cite something, use the identifier of the source or literature or whatever you source. There are some really good guides on data management. The last one there is in Finnish, and it's about open science more largely. But the Finnish Social Science Data Archive has an extremely good guide. You can skip maybe the parts about sensitive data if you don't have anything with humans. But anyway, it's really good about planning and stuff. So there are many, many things you should think about when documenting your process, and also open up all this. And so I want to say something about data quality, which that's important. In this data deluge, we have an open data. A lot of data is such, it's not so good. You can't use it really. For data to be really good, it has to be sort of course, it always depends on where it comes from and who's using it for what, the question of how you use it. But it has to have, you have to have information about the the provenance, where does it come from, how it's been created, how is it used. So this is something you should also use, think about when you prepare your own data. What does everybody else need to know to be able to really understand this? Data has to be intelligible. If you use any codes, you have to explain what's AB and Z. What do they mean? What kind of measures am I using? Prepare a README file or something. Data should be also coherent and well structured. Usually, the better structured it is, and better described, the better it is. So there's data storage. I want to just make this point about these different kinds of services. You have storage where you can sort of share data and you can copy it and sort of you can use it as backup or whatever. No, there's something that has dropped outside. But then you have the data repository, which is an archive. And when the data is there, archived, then it has a persistent identifier, then it has metadata. It's also frozen so that nobody can tamper with it, and you document every change you make. And I would like you to think is that at this point, it would be really good if you have your data and you give it to repository, give all the rights also to the repository. Because this has been a sort of trend that people want to say that, you have to ask me before you use this data, just for fun, sort of without no real reason. You have the right to do it if it's under copyright and there's no other contracts that inhibit that. But that's not really something you want to do. I mean, in 10 years, you don't maybe want to have these emails about this student X or Y who wants to use your data. Handover. It's the data handover. And hand over it. See to it that it's free and then let go. because it serves no good to put extra problems. Just sort of donate it. And here, if you have your data is in a repository, if you have a field-specific repository, use that. Otherwise, you can use a general repository. But this is the way it is described with metadata in a catalog. It has an identifier. People can cite it, and they can find it. But only these persistent versions. Then we have also data preservation, long-term preservation, which is really expensive and quite difficult. That is something you don't have to bother about, I think, yet. But it's a question for the research society also to get, I think, involved in this and discuss these things. Which are the data sets we want to do we really need for 100 years later or so? And what format should they be preserved and so far. So it's a discussion that's good if you start among yourselves in the research community. But yeah. Okay, so now this final conclusion. I'm maybe a bit over time already. But this is the sort of normal, the way the librarians and the data archivists look at it, they see this data life cycle, but it's really a data life cycle, and I think it's not always a very fruitful way to communicate this to the researchers, because the research, they don't want to be ramanpyörä. you really, I mean, research is going forward. So what I have proposed this sort of, this is the traditional science, sort of. You have this research process, and then you have this maybe one article, and then another, and your thesis or something, and that's it. But if you open up the process, if you publish your gray paper data and everything, then it will sort of flourish, and you can get a much bigger impact. And also this is the way I would like to see this open science process. I'm sorry I don't have sort of lots of easy answers, because this is so domain specific. You really have to, you have to think about this yourself. And as I understood, you will do it during this course. And I wish you good luck, and I wish you share and tell your good ideas. If you find come up with good practices or something, we're very interested in the Open Science and Research Initiative to tell about this and know about this. You can look at the avointiede.fi, openscience.fi pages, especially in the Finnish version. There you can find a lot of texts and examples and stuff and information that maybe will inspire and help you. So thank you. Now I will stop.
Thank you, Jessica. Do you have any questions for Jessica? So I know that you will have to go early today, but will you still be here for?
Yeah, I thought too about machines.
Okay, so you can also ask questions to Jessica, maybe during lunch or later on, but maybe not too late, because Jessica will have to take a train, not too late. So please, don't wait for too long before asking the questions to her.